good?
The bad.
WTF. Thinking.
Welcome back to episode 74 of The Good, The Bad, and the WTF, What Are They Thinking? Peter, how are we?
Doing very well, and I think the first thing we need to say is congratulations to the Lionesses on their Euro win.
Woo! Yeah, finally, England win something in the football. It's about time.
It's only taken 4 years.
Incredible journey. It's only taken 4 years. Incredible journey and an incredible tournament overall. Mm-hmm. Part of me didn't really have any doubts that they were going to do it. I thought they were going to do it almost from the very beginning, and they got stronger and stronger throughout the tournament. So they fully deserved it.
And there was that one stage, obviously, when the Germans equalised that I thought, here we go. Mm. Same story, same old story here. And my heart sunk a little bit, but we stuck in there. We did well. And yeah, it's nice to win. So it's nice to be on the other side for once.
It is, because we're not used to it as England. And yeah, this is an important moment in history for women's football as well, especially in this country. So hopefully things only escalate from there and the greatness continues. But we're not here to talk about football.
No?
We're talking about bloody movies.
The wrong podcast.
All right.
It was good knowing you.
Yeah.
I wondered why you wanted to talk about this movie then.
The movie that you selected?
Yes.
Last week? We'll get into that in a second, but have we got any little softeners to ease us in, movie-related wise?
Not really. Not really. I know a few things have dropped on the Venice Festival, the Toronto Festival as well. The lineups have dropped for that. There's a couple of interesting movies on there. We're coming closer to sort of award season, so you're getting the bigger hitters. There's a few that kind of piqued my interest. Darren Aronofsky's The Whale, which has got Brendan Fraser. It could be a comeback performance. Maybe he did it with Mickey Rourke. Maybe he could do it with Brendan Fraser.
Hey. No one's saying they can't do it. So,
And then there was what was there on Netflix? We had a few movies dropped, and we had The Gray Man, which I haven't seen.
Gray Man,
which I've not heard very good things about.
Oh, do you know what? Netflix originals are taking a bit of a hit, aren't they? There hasn't been a good critically received original. I mean, The Hustle was good. Hustle was good, but that wasn't really proper Netflix original, was it? It was more sold on Netflix. Happy Madison.
I think that is
LeBron
that
James.
Would
that count as a proper
I think
Netflix
it does
original?
Because probably, I'm pretty sure that Adam Sandler's got a Netflix deal, so it probably comes under the Netflix deal.
Yeah. Okay. Let me rephrase that. Netflix films that have got like a big push, because Hustle didn't really have that big push. There was world premieres. There was UK premieres for The Gray Man. It had Ryan Gosling doing all the circuits around here. And we've had a few movies like that recently.
You had that Dwayne Johnson
they're putting a lot.
That I've never seen, but I've heard bad things about it. And so I've kept clear of it.
Yeah, they seem to be pumping in money into the wrong movies. Hustle deserved a bigger marketing push. That was the good movie that they released recently.
I think
it didn't get the market and push it deserved.
I think Netflix struggling to understand what made a great Netflix movie, in my opinion. My opinion was a movie that is something that you just happen to come across, you know, like an Osher, you know, something like that. Or, yeah, you know, I don't feel like I belong in this world anymore, you know, something like that, where it is like a very niche, very weird. And something like The Gray Man, that's a cinema movie. For me, that's something that, like, a Paramount should be distributing. I don't know what their plans are. I just think, like, it's not very original.
No, it seems to be, they're going big scale, but that's kind of it.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre this year. That's something that That's a good idea. Like, if they release like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie every 1 to 2 years, that's something that people will sit and watch on Netflix. I know apparently the Grey Man, they've really gone in for it, so now it's going to be a franchise apparently.
Okay, okay. But if the first one isn't good and it's not well received,
depends on the numbers, but
it's hard to grow, isn't it, into a franchise? You need to kick off with a good one.
It depends on the viewership. They obviously, it must have got viewed a lot, and it is. Netflix are going to view a lot, but I mean, they've lost a lot of subscribers. Obviously, I think
they have.
Stranger Things probably brought a lot of people back, but I still think they're struggling a bit.
I think they are. I've kept mine going for a long time. I probably won't cancel mine, to be honest.
No, there's still. I mean,
just because I can't be bothered. I can't be bothered to re-register and keep canceling. Yeah. That's the only thing I can't build, because I know.
And I love the documentaries on there. That for me is that's where I go to watch documentaries.
Yeah, documentaries are good. Very, very good.
That's the best thing they do. I think TV shows and the movies are a bit hit or miss most of the time for me, but the documentaries, they're always great. There's always one. Every week, there seems to be a new one on there, and they just keep adding to my list.
They do kill it in that department, so we give them props there. But, if we haven't got much to talk about in the intro, we may as well get straight into the main event. So this week's movie was chosen by Peter himself, Assault on Precinct 13. Yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, this is the 13th in the franchise, so we started straight in the middle. And I mean, 1 to 12, I liked Assault on Precinct 5 the best. That was my favourite precinct.
That was a
good one. So this movie...
A lot of abandoned precincts.
They haven't learned. I mean, from the 13th one, it's just like, you need to learn what's going on here. So, this is a exploitation movie from the 70s, the sophomore feature of John Carpenter after Dark Star. And it's about a likely partnership between a highway patrol officer, two criminals, and a station secretary. That when they have to defend a defunct LA precinct against a siege of bloodthirsty gang. This is a very interesting one because obviously 2 years later, John Carpenter directs Halloween, which then obviously is like a behemoth. And it's interesting to see what he did after Dark. Have you ever seen Dark Star? It's a very interesting movie. You can find it on Pluto TV if you really want to. It's directed by Carpenter, and it's written by him and Dan O'Bannon. Now, Dan O'Bannon, later on, he went to actually write Alien. And Dark Star is like the brainchild of Alien. You can see where Alien was coming from. It's a very 70s goofy movie. It's not a great movie, but there's some charm to it. But it does feel like there's like the inner workings of Alien there. And that was a student movie that he did at where he was learning to do film school, which then suddenly there became interest, and then they got more funding, and so they made it into a movie. So after that, he had the opportunity to make a second movie, and they basically said, right, this is the kind of movie we want, this is how much you're gonna get, write us a script, and we'll go from there. And this is, if there's anything you know about John Carpenter, he's a big Western fan. He loves Westerns. He's never made a Western, and this is like a modern day Western. Yeah, I think actually there's a few of them. I mean, Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China and this, they all feel like, and Ghost of Mars as well, they all feel like Westerns, but this probably is the most Western-y movie he's ever made.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. I didn't get Western vibes when I watched this movie, mm-hmm. I'll be honest. But I see what you're saying. The vibes I got were the exact vibes that kind of were actually the influence on the street gang, and that was the zombiness of them. The fact that they were kind of like, it felt a bit like a zombie movie, the way they were kind of attacking the precinct, and they weren't really showing much sign of life. They weren't really speaking. They were just kind of like going at them in the dead of the night, and it kind of did feel a bit like a zombie movie. Yeah.
I liked how dehumanized they were, and there's no rhyme or reason that what they're doing makes sense, and we never really understand why they're doing what they're doing, and so it kind of gives you this mystery, and it was fascinating to have. I mean, there's so many of them. This gang was like, how many people were in this gang? And they were ever growing gang. And I mean, it's quite shocking. I mean, the first real shocking death is when the little girl gets killed, which surprised me.
I was shocked too at that. I was very much like, fuck. Like, jaw-droppingly shit. Yep. Just because it was so brutal. Yep. I just wasn't expecting it. Especially, was that really the first death of the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
By the day course.
Yeah, was it the first or second? It's probably the second, because I think the ice cream truck man was first. And then...
No, he didn't die. No, he didn't die there, did he? Because he spoke to the father.
That's it, yeah.
So he actually... He was and he wasn't even shot, actually. She was shot before he was shot. Because I remember. That was the first time the gun was fired. And then he fired at the ice cream man. Which is a weird scene. I was watching that scene and I was like, just get the fuck out of there, man. This ice cream man just sitting there watching his car go back and forward. Why was he just sitting there?
There's so much... mystery about this movie. Like, it honestly feels like you've walked into a movie halfway. I like that because there's another story going on, but that story doesn't matter. What happens is the circumstances of that one moment which changes the story into another. What are these gang gonna do? Are they just going around causing mayhem, or is there a rhyme or reason that they're all getting ready and then suddenly some guy decides to kill him because they killed his daughter, which makes sense. And then it just snowballs.
Makes
a lot of
sense.
Story snowballs.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It is a weird movie. I don't know if I like this movie. There was a lot of acting that was questionable. You're gonna pull the low budget card on me, and I can just feel that coming.
I mean,
but some of the scenes I felt like, oh, they could have shot that again and done a better reaction. Yeah,
but you also got to remember, this is Carpenter's second movie, as well. So he's also young. I don't know what age he was here. Maybe 30, earlier than 30. So this was. This was a young man trying to get his understanding of how to make a movie. It doesn't have... I mean, it's a small budget. It's not going to have big actors, because this was the time where even, like, good movies of the 70s had bad actors in them, like bad acting. I think it was just kind of the style at that time, and this movie was going to have that struggle. But I don't think everybody was bad. I think Tony Burton was pretty good. I like Charles Cyphers. Two of them obviously went on and had very good careers. Even Austin Stoker was good. Darman Johnson kind of plays like the John Wayne kind of character. Like, he has all the one-liners that you would expect
he was funny.
He reminds me of like a serious version of Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. And it's funny how that kind of how the evolution of that character has began.
He was funny. Anyone got a smoke?
Well, when he says,
he had
can't
a few...
argue with a confident man. It's one of my favorites.
Then what was my favorite line? My favorite line was where he said, I need to find a quote because I don't want to get it wrong, because it was a really good, he was very witty in this movie, so this was a really good witty line. Bear with me, I'm just getting the quotes up before I say them. Where is it? Fuck's sake. Why did they not include this quote in the best quotes of the movie?
Why did you not anyway, write it down? I think is the bigger question.
I should have wrote it down. Yeah, I should have wrote it down. It was the quote where he was like, why did, what, you know, what, the guy was asking him, like, why did you do it? You're not a psychopath. You're not a da da da. He goes, but I am an asshole. You can't take everything away from me. Something like that. I just like that. That was a good line.
I mean, this movie was made for under $100,000.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it doesn't cost anything to say the line, hey, he's playing dead. Or, he fell over. I mean, he got shot and he's laying on his back. He fell over. And then they go outside and it's like, choo, choo. He didn't fall over, he's dead. That some of the lines and some of the moments where like the police were like getting shot at, and then they were just diving in front of things and going and then getting shot down. Some of the decision making is weird. It's like video game characters. It weren't the best decision making, it comes with the genre.
I'm used to remember he wrote this script in 8 days.
I know, he could have spent a bit longer on it.
Oh no, but he had really to. Wanted the to. Whole point was that it had to be. Remember, this is like this company is like, we need this movie out. We've already got the poster. This is what's happening. Just write us a script, damn it, and then make the movie. I think he made it in 20 days as well. So it was fast. This movie was fast.
He shot it in 20 days. Interesting fact, the address of the Precinct 13 was John Carpenter's real address in Los Angeles at the time. Which is fucking mental, isn't it? Why did he think, oh, I'm going to use my address? What is that about? I kind of respect that in a way. It's kind of weird. But I imagine he moved out pretty soon after, as soon as that fact was released. Anyway.
Yeah, he wondered why there was like a bunch of faceless street gang keep being outside his apartment. Probably shouldn't get my address.
Yeah, he was asking for an assault on his own address, wasn't he, really? Yeah, interesting movie.
I love the music to this. I mean, this was good. This is where most of Carpenter's movies, apart from The Thing, have his music in it. And this one is like an iconic one. Do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very simple, but all of Carpenter's music is quite simple to play. Well, not for me. I can't play any of it. I can't play even the do-do bit, let alone the do-do-do-do bit.
It's tough. It's tough. No, it's not for everybody. I like that he scores his own movies as well. Like that is a nice little thing that he does. But he's not really. I mean, what was the last movie he actually made? I think it was 2010. Mm-hmm. Was the last movie he made? So you know, it's been a while since. I mean, he's involved in movies, isn't he? As like a producer,
he's
composer.
He's involved in the new Halloween movies, isn't he? I know he's done. Yeah. I know he's gone on tour, with his music. So he's been involved in that. I don't know if he'll ever make a movie again. I would have thought probably not. I would have thought it's such a long time, whether he's just happy not to make a movie now or whether he just can't get one made. I don't know. I would have thought he would be able to get one made, so I'm pretty sure it's probably the fact that he's not that interested.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he'd definitely be able to get a movie made, let's be honest. But interesting. But he is involved in the new Halloween movies, which is good. I don't know how much involvement he really has.
I think...
Might just be like a credit.
I think he steps back.
That,
yeah, I don't think he...
he's not on set,
No, I think he probably lets them... Considering he probably knows how it's like to have to fight all the time, I imagine that he probably stands back and lets David Gordon Green call most of the shots.
take it over. Yeah, but you can tell he must the music side of it is something he obviously really enjoys. He's obviously composed a lot of his movies, and that seems to be the thing he does most of now anyway. So he's happy, and that's all that matters. Did you manage to spot him in the movie? He was an uncredited gang member. Did you manage to spot him?
The good thing about the gang members is they were so faceless that it literally became, it did not matter who they were, just the fact that they're the enemy. And I like the simplicity to that.
Yeah, no, it was proper low budget. Proper low budget. Proper dehumanized characters. A lot of them were students as well, weren't they? A lot of them were students in LA who were used as the gang members. So there wouldn't have been a lot of acting going on with them anyway, or a lot of words. It was just kind of like climbing through windows, firing shots, walking slowly towards the building. That was sort of, those were the acting notes that they had to follow.
Which is fine. I mean, but was one of them, simple, yeah, fine. You know, you're a gang member, your girlfriend's just broke up with you, you're feeling a little bit emotional, you want revenge. There's some prisoners inside there with some security guys and some policemen. Go inside and kill them. But remember, you got to be back at 10 because you haven't given the cat its saucer of milk. Go with it. That's too much. It's like, who am I? So you're just a killer, man. Who cares? Just go on that window and kill.
Just do it. Just do it. Interestingly, Laurie Zimmer, didn't have much of a career after this, did she?
I don't think many of them
did. She did two more movies and then just kind of gave up acting after that. I always find that quite interesting. Like, that's quite a big movie to be in for your debut. And then just to be like, well, not for me.
It's not. It's a big movie now. I don't know how big it was at the time. Obviously, it's been resurrected through fans, really, this movie, and celebrated because of Halloween. Like, Halloween, like, pushed Carpenter. Now, you know, everything he did after that was going to be highlighted. Anything he did before that was also going to be highlighted. And Assault on Precinct 13 is that movie. It's not a great movie, but there's the inner beginnings of a great director.
That's the most interesting thing. Especially that this movie came just before Halloween. Halloween followed this one. So that is a huge kind of thing, isn't it? So maybe that does play into it, the movie just before Halloween. I don't really know much hype the Dark Star gets in comparison to this. This is probably more of a cult one.
This one's the cult one, yeah. I would say Dark Star is more of an intrigue. It's like, oh, I wonder what this movie's like. Because it's... you got to see it. I mean, see it on Pluto TV. I urge anyone to watch Dark Star. It's an intriguing movie. Yeah. I'm not going to say you'll like it, but you'll be intrigued by it. Especially if, like, you want to see the prequel to Alien that wasn't Prometheus. It's Dark Star. That's what it's called.
There you go. That's enough to make you want to watch it.
What I like about early Carpenter, the two movies we'll talk about, Assault Precinct and Halloween, they're the same movie when you think about it. This faceless evil which is doesn't want to stop and it will keep coming after you. It's interesting that his two movies were like that.
Yeah, it is, to be fair. Maybe that's just kind of his little thing, isn't it?
Well,
maybe that is his like.
He always said, and I really like this quote, and I've always remembered it. It was on a documentary. I think it was called Masters of Horror or something like that. And he said there's only two types of horror movies. And he's made both of them, by the way. He said, so you're sitting in a campfire and you're telling a story that somewhere in the woods behind you is something evil that's going to come and get you. Right? And the second story is you're sitting at the campfire, but one of you in the campfire is the evil one. So it's the evil you don't know, and it's the evil you know.
Interesting. I like that. It's a good quote.
And it's very true. Those are the two types of horror movies. It's either the unknown horror or the known horror.
There you go. That's nice. That's a nice little quote. Some of his quotes are a bit like that. It kind of gives you an insight into his character. He doesn't really big himself up. He kind of more talks himself down, doesn't he? Like he said, in England, I'm a horror movie director. In Germany, I'm a filmmaker. In the US, I'm a bum.
I
don't know what he really means by that, though. Like, is he not that well received in America?
Well, I mean, no, he's very well received. I think the problem is that he fell out of love with the studio system. He made some studio movies and they bombed. I mean, The Thing was a massive flop. And now The Thing is hailed as a masterpiece. But at the time, it was flop. Everyone, not everyone, but it was critically panned. And he just, I think, like, what was it, 1987, something like that, he went to do The Prince of Darkness, which was a more independent movie. And I think he pretty much kept to independent filmmaking then. I think he came back. There was obviously the Chevy Chase Invisible Man movie, which would have been a studio movie, which again critically panned. But he's apart from Halloween, and I'm only paraphrasing, apart from Halloween, I think that's like his big commercial breakthrough, and everything else has always been a struggle. Big Trouble in Little Chinatown, another cult movie, was not well received when it came out. So he seems to be a director who makes movies that people love, but either is misunderstood at the time or is not well marketed.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he's just kind of ahead of his time. Like, because, yeah, the reviews about The Thing were very negative, weren't they? They didn't like the plot, they didn't really like the acting, they didn't really like that it was trying to cash in on like E.T. and
well,
stuff
that's
like
the
that.
Thing. E.T. was the big movie of 1982, and that was about a friendly alien that everybody loves. Nobody wanted to see this grotesque alien thing. And also, I think that's another thing. He's always been pigeonholed that he is the gore director. I mean, I was remembering saying about The Fog, for example, that he wanted to make that a PG-13, but because of who he was, they wanted it an R. But it was, there's no gore in it, it's just a ghost story. But they wanted it to be an R because it's John Carpenter.
Stupid, really, isn't it? Just because his name's attached to it.
It's the MPAA. That's just what they are, isn't it?
It's shite, really, isn't it? It's shite. But yeah, no, his discography is very interesting in that sense. The way it's aged is brilliant. Like, obviously, Halloween, he managed to make a lot of money out of that. That's obviously become a very popular franchise. And he only did the first one. And then
the second one. Again, the Halloween thing. I mean, we've reviewed Halloween 3.
We've spoken about, yeah.
And the original plan was, of Halloween franchise. Because he wrote Halloween 2, and the idea is he only wanted to get involved in that one if Michael Myers died at the end. So they killed Michael Myers off, they ended the story, and the third one came, and they wanted to do an anthology thing. And of course, the third one came out, obviously marketed it badly, because everyone was like, where's Michael Myers? So then that does a complete reshuffle, and suddenly Michael Myers is now Halloween, and it's changed. And
And Michael Myers has gone from that like kind of skinny like killer just walking up and down. I mean, he's always been tall, but he's kind of slender, isn't he? And then in the newer ones, he's a bit more like beefed up, and he can lift up by the neck.
It's the same actor as the original Halloween, though, Nick Castle.
Is it actually?
Yeah, it's the same actor.
All the way through?
Not all the way through.
Why does
it
feel like he's beefed up a lot
like
more?
The first Halloween and then the new ones, Halloween and Halloween Kills, are the same guy. But they probably have beefed up in the other ones. Definitely, in Rob Zombie's Halloween. I mean, that guy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
What
Tyler
mean.
Bain, which I believe he played Sabretooth in X-Men. He is, I'm pretty sure he's a bodybuilder. He is massive, and that makes no sense that Michael Myers would be that big.
No, I agree with that. But it kind of makes him less scary. It kind of makes him a bit more Jason-like.
Well, yeah, which, they all,
I never found Jason scary.
Jason was fun.
Never that scary.
The Friday the 13th movie is just fun. But yeah, I think, I mean, to go back to Assault Precinct 13, so there's a lot of, you can see a lot of similarities between this and Halloween. He's obviously in his beginning, this is his bare bones, right? Just make these movies, and hopefully I can progress even more. But, I mean, it's a great movie. I think he said he had the most fun doing this movie as well.
He did. It feels like it was a fun movie to shoot. Very simple movie to shoot as well. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But there were bits where I was laughing at it. Like, some of the acting, I was laughing at it. That'd probably be the only downside. But you have to kind of take it for what it is at the same time. So maybe I'm being a little bit harsh.
It's your first time seeing it. I think, you know, some movies, they need to grow on you. I liked it more this time, and I'll stick with it. I did enjoy this movie. It's definitely going in good for me.
It's going to go in good for me as
well.
There
we go.
And we move on to the next segment. It's your decision again.
Yes.
What are we doing? What are we doing this week?
Oh, I hope you have a list.
Oh God.
You forgot.
Well, what is it?
Top five. We're doing a top five.
Ah, oh, jeez. When did you tell me this?
I told you very early on.
Fucking hell.
You're
gonna find the receipts here. I don't know if you've said anything.
I definitely said something. Oh no, I said it to you actually. I said it to you when we met on Tuesday.
You bastard. How was I going to remember that?
Because it was Tuesday. I said to you on Tuesday when we met to go and watch Frankie Boyle live.
Plug.
About the top five. And you've obviously...
This
is poor podcasting right here.
Mistakes were made. We're allowed to make mistakes in this podcast. I can't put it in text form. I can't believe that. I normally go back through the text.
Form.
You must have, but maybe it just.
I told you what was happening. Because I even explained to you what it meant.
In my head, I was like, "He's going to do a quiz."
No.
He hasn't told me what he's doing. No. He's going to do a quiz.
Top five sophomore films is what we're doing. So
you never said that.
I said that to you.
What you said? Heist movies.
No. So you've half listened to what I said.
Wow, I haven't.
I can't remember if we did a heist one before. We probably did because of Point Break, which I think if I look back, we probably did. And also, it doesn't need to be a heist movie because it's a siege. There's no heist in this movie, so there you go.
It is a siege. All right. I definitely don't remember you saying sophomore. I would have probably done a top five heists if I had remembered. Yours.
That still would have been the wrong one, wouldn't it, really?
I can probably pick mine as we go. So let's go for it. We'll start with yours.
I think my number five will be on your one anyway. Us by Jordan Peele.
Oh, same. That is my number five.
So... Let's talk about this movie.
I love this movie.
So Jordan Peele, obviously, very important director. We're going to watch Nope soon, hopefully, fingers crossed. I will watch it. I think it comes out in 2 weeks' time.
100%.
For me, this was like... the idea I wanted to do a sophomore one was because of... obviously, this was Carpenter's second feature. And it's the idea of it's like, this is the make or break of a director, a good director. Like, where are they going to go? Are they going to have another hit? Or have they rediscovered the mistakes they made on the first one and they've cleaned the pipes, so to speak? And for me, I Get Out is a great movie. I think, for me, Us is the better movie. And I think it's just because I was like, I am sold on this journey that Jordan Peele is going to take us on. These are the movie he's going to make. I'm sold on that adventure. And for me, Nope, Not Nope. For me, Us is it's a real wild, interesting ride, which again doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about it, but it doesn't really need to make sense.
It's a great story, no matter what, isn't
yeah.
it? The idea is brilliant. The idea is fantastic. And it's an idea that you can get behind at all audiences, if you think about it. You know, you think about the upside down world of Stranger Things, and you think about this is kind of its own sort of upside down thing. And the idea that there is, you do have a doppelganger living below you, is kind of scary.
Very scary.
There is something very creepy about
almost
that idea.
Like Bart Simpson's evil twin. Like,
yes,
I bet in this time you've never even looked at yourself in the mirror, you know.
It's enough to creep you out. I agree. I love this movie. I watch this movie in the cinema. I'll always watch these movies in the cinema, because I just know he's not going to disappoint me. I've got all the faith in the world. I trust him very, very much as a director. This movie's brilliant, start to finish. And I remember when I watched this movie in the cinema, I was desperate for a wee. And I don't like leaving the cinema to go to the toilet, but I was like, oh, I can't focus on the movie. I have to go for a wee. And I went for a wee, and it was very mirrored. The journey was very mirrored to the toilet. Like, there was a lot of mirrors around.
You've
and
said
I was
this story before,
out.
I think.
Yeah, I think I probably have. But I'll say it again, people who haven't heard. Not everyone listens to every episode. And I was very creeped out when I was in the toilets, because I was looking at myself and I was like, is that me?
Just suddenly someone strangles you.
And then I went back. But there's a scene I'll always remember, which is the scene where their doppelgangers, the original family doppelgangers, the main family, mm-hmm. visit the friend's family's house and murder them all. Great scene with the music as well. Fuck the police. Give me, was it Fuck the Police? It was,
yeah. So, yeah, I think
that's
it was.
Just really good scene. Love that scene. That's really set the tone for the movie, in my opinion. And it was, yeah. It was pretty damn fantastic. And I enjoyed the entire journey. I enjoyed all the little references. They even had a reference to FUD. Was it FUD?
Chud.
Not FUD. Chud. Sorry. They had a reference to Chud as well. So there you go. And Hands Across America, which was a weird idea.
Very weird. Very weird. So number four. So my number four, Memento, Christopher Nolan.
It's a good choice. I agree with that one too.
What is your number four?
Yeah, I'm going to put it as my number four too.
Are we going to have a solid five?
I think we will. Something tells me we will.
Something tells me we might not. So, Memento. Let's talk about it. I've never seen this original movie, which is Following. I've never seen it. But Memento, I think, was the first Nolan movie I saw. I actually watched it. It's one of the rare cases where I watched it twice in a row. One of the rare times. Yeah,
it's because you felt like you didn't get it. You were confused.
I really enjoyed the experience, and two, I wanted to kind of understand it a little bit more.
Mm.
So I watched it twice in a row. I love this movie. I mean, people will call it the movie played backwards, which it is. I mean, the ending is the beginning, and the beginning is the ending. But I really enjoy how they made the movie. I really enjoy the characters, the sort of mystery unraveling, and in the end, the protagonist is actually a bit of an anti-hero for what he does. And I like that there's a group of actors that you rarely see. At that time, they were like in movies, but you rarely see them these days. So it's a bit of a time capsule, like Carrie Ann Moss and Joe Pantolino and Guy Pearce. I mean, you rarely see them making movies.
Yeah, I suppose so. Especially as like leads. Especially as proper leads.
Yeah. And I like how they change from the flashback scenes to black and white, and the current scenes color. I like all the little tricks. I haven't seen Following, so I don't know what his tricks were like there. But the one thing about Nolan, if you had to say like, oh, what is the main thing Nolan likes to go back to? It's he likes to play with time. Time is always an interesting thing he likes to do with these movies. And here he has time in reverse. And obviously, if you've got someone who has memory loss, you can really play with time and memory in a very interesting way. And that's obviously what he did.
He did. And his run from Memento onwards, it's pretty unrivaled, isn't it? If you think about it. Insomnia was a great movie.
Yeah, I like it. Very underrated, I think, that movie.
Yeah, that movie made me feel very tired watching that movie. I felt like I was an insomniac too. It kind of really, really captured that feeling very well. Batman Begins, Prestige, Dark Knight, Inception, Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Tenet. That's a fucking good run of direct. That's a very good run. And then he obviously has Oppenheimer, which is coming out soon. The poster for that, which came out recently, which I sent you, looks epic, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That looks good.
And it's got a big cast as well coming. So. No, he is.
Very big cast.
Where he went from this one, he just kept going higher and higher and higher. And I know he has his critics. I know a lot of people don't like him. I think it's easy to hate someone who is on top, who's popular. And you kind of forget that he is a great director. You might not like everything he does, but the man is very talented in a technical aspect. He's just got a keen eye, and he everything that's in the shot is in the shot. And this is a good one with memory, because it really does play with you, and it really makes you think, it really makes you focus, it really makes you try and picture what is memory. And there's a great bit of dialogue in this movie which I always remember, which is funny, where he says, you know, where Guy Pearce says, you don't catch a criminal by memory, you catch him through facts. Memory can change the color of a car and the shape of a room. And I always remember that because it's very true.
It is very true. It's good. It's good writing. It's good writing. You have to appreciate that. Yeah, it's a good movie. That's a good movie. Confusing movie. I think it is a double watcher, triple watcher. Mm-hmm. If you get it on your first time, then fair play. But, yeah. Number three.
Number three is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, by Andrew Dominik.
This is a movie I haven't seen.
I love this movie. Really, I really love this movie. And I think for me, this is like his masterpiece. I can't wait to see the Marilyn movie that he's going to do. I think, which is going to be called Blonde, about Marilyn Monroe, which I think is going to be aired on Netflix at some point this year. This one's great for the fact of it's just a big, soaring Western epic. It has powerful performances. Casey Affleck is great in this movie. Brad Pitt is great in this movie. Sam Rockwell is great in this movie. Like, you pick an actor in this movie and it's one of their best performances or up there. The dialogue's so great. I mean, I feel it feels the most authentic Western movie with the dialogue. I love everything about it. I like the Roger Deakins cinematography. I like the music. I like the title, which is something that the studio wanted to change, but Brad Pitt was adamant that it had to keep the title, that he would take a pay cut for the title. and that shows you how much he was invested in this movie, how much he believed in Andrew Dominik. And Andrew Dominik doesn't make a lot of movies. He takes a long time to like find his next movie. But this one to me showcased that he is a talented director.
Definitely. The title is fantastic. I can imagine why they were like, please change it. It's just so long. It is good.
That, and it pretty much tells you what happens at the end.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, nonetheless, I like it. What's your number two?
So my number two, now I think this might be a controversial number two. Reservoir Dogs.
Ooh.
Quentin Tarantino.
Now, why would that be a controversial one?
Because many people will say it's Quentin Tarantino's first movie. However, it's actually not. It's not his first movie. I know he technically doesn't count his first movie, which was My Best Friend's Birthday. But I'm not here to do the what is the first movie, because I think, you know, if you made a movie before and it was called My Best Friend's Birthday and it's a feature film, then I'm pretty sure that the movie you make afterwards is your second movie. That's just math to me. It's just simple math. So Reservoir Dogs, I mean, what can we say about Reservoir Dogs? I've never seen My Best Friend's Birthday, but if he had such a terrible time with that one and he hated everything about it, then everything that went wrong with My Best Friend's Birthday, he made sure went completely right for Reservoir Dogs. And Reservoir Dogs is, that was a huge movie when that came out in Sundance. That was an important movie. And obviously, it's hard to, we weren't there, so we never saw it, but like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, when they came out, they were huge movies.
Yeah, I think the issue with this one is that technically My Best Friend's Birthday is an incomplete movie, isn't it? It's only 36 minutes long because of a lab fire. So technically, I'd have to give Tarantino the points ahead of you here in that sense, that he's right and you're wrong. So technically this is his first movie, because if it's incomplete, I think that's unfair to say that's his first movie. I think that's very unfair.
Why are you doing this to me? Do you like to do this to me? You like,
I just
to,
think it's,
you
I,
like
I,
to embarrass I, me I just, in front of all our guests, our listeners.
I just think I do. I just think it's unfair. I think it's unfair. I think this is a bad choice for me, and it is.
Pulp
unfair.
Fiction was an amazing opportunity, and it was his second feature. And the thing about Pulp Fiction is, it went on to create something that it was a movie. I'm going to put Pulp Fiction stroke Reservoir Dogs. How about that?
You just went into a whole epilogue on fucking Pulp Fiction. I was thinking,
Pulp Fiction.
Is he wanting me to edit this together or something?
Pulp Fiction. What a movie. Second feature from the man that we call Quentin Tarantino.
Now, that is an incredible second movie to release. So Reservoir Dogs, obviously, is a brilliant first movie. But if your second movie is Pulp Fiction, Pulp Fiction is levels above Reservoir Dogs.
Pulp Fiction is his best movie. It's it his best movie, I would legitimately say Pulp Fiction's probably one of the top 10 movies ever made. I would easily say it'd be in the top 10.
Whoa, steady your horses, son. We'll have an episode on that one day.
One day, but I mean, it is, one, it's so popular, and two, so influential. I mean, how many movies wanted to be Pulp Fiction after Pulp Fiction?
The poster's sick as well, isn't it?
The poster
so good.
Is amazing.
Why is it so good? It's so simple, but it looks just, it's just a text. It looks like a magazine.
Everything is perfect. I would say, and no way is this a hit at Tarantino here, but for me, Pulp Fiction, he peaked. And what I mean is, Pulp Fiction is such a great movie, such a masterpiece. Where can you go anywhere else? You know, like, to make a movie better than Pulp Fiction is incredibly hard, and I think impossible. And that's why I think, like, everything about that movie is incredible.
He's made some decent movies after.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that is the pinnacle movie.
Yeah, that is the top. I mean, we'll do a Tarantino ranking list one day. I think there's no surprise who Peter's going to put as number one.
I think that's the common sense number one. Surely there's no other movie that could ever top that.
Mm. It is a great movie. It is a really good movie. And it makes you want to eat your burger, doesn't it?
No. It makes me hate burgers because they talk about them too much. Yes. It makes me want to find a soup car full of shiny gold things, though.
Yeah. And that's part of what makes this movie great as well, the mystery. You don't fully know what's really going on a lot of the time. It is a lot of mystery.
They always, I like the conspiracy theories of Pulp Fiction. So they reckon what's in the suitcase is Marcella Wallace's soul. Because if you look on the first shot at the back of his head, he has a bandage on the back of his head where they reckon his soul escaped and it's in the suitcase.
I actually think that they don't know what to put in the suitcase idea of it being a mystery.
I don't think it's that they don't know. I think what it is Quentin Tarantino knows it's much more interesting if you never see what's in it than if you see what's in it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. The mystery is better than the reality for that situation. Yeah.
But I think
Marcellus Wallace's soul is a crazy one.
I think it is his soul. Because it only makes sense.
There you go. We're gonna let it be his soul. All right. What's your is number one now?
Number one, yes.
Number one, yeah.
Boogie Nights. That's number one. Paul Thomas Anderson. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's always gonna be up there. This is a movie I could watch at any point of any moment that the film's on. I could watch it on the hour to 40 mark, I could watch it at the end credit mark, I could watch it at 5 minutes in. I'd literally pick up and I'd know exactly where I was and I'd be like, right, I understand where we are. Play. Hard Eight is a good movie. You see the beginnings of Paul Thomas Anderson, but this is, again, it might be Paul Thomas Anderson's best movie. I mean, There Will Be Blood is a good shout. I think Phantom Thread could possibly also go there. I haven't seen Licorice Pizza. I know you did. But this one is where we found the voice of Paul Thomas Anderson. And what a voice. And he's still loud and strong as ever. And this was the movie. This movie is so big and epic. Has so many stories. Has so many characters. It's like revisiting Friends sometimes. There's so many great performances in this movie. Mark Wahlberg, John C. Reilly, Burt Reynolds, Julianne Moore, Thomas Jane, Alfred Molina, Philip Seymour Hoffman, William H. Macy. I love the crazy bits about it. One of my favorite scenes, and it's a scene which is meant to put you on edge. It's the scene where they go to Alfred Molina's where they're going to rob him. And they're going to steal his money. And the music's too loud. And they're playing Jesse's Girl and something else. And they're all sitting there. Mark Wahlberg, Thomas Jane, and John C. Reilly. They're all sitting there like anxious because they know what's going to happen. And you got this music playing really loud. And you got this guy, this half-naked guy, walking around with them little firecrackers and just throwing them on the floor and they explode. And you just got all this noise and it's all like sudden and like too loud and like you can't hear yourself think. And I love that. I think that's such a powerful scene.
It is a good movie. It's a very atmospheric movie. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think you could pick it up and watch it at any point as well.
And it has one of the best single take shots in the opening. The old tracking shot as they go into the nightclub. And it's just like one continuous shot. That is great.
Sets the scene up perfectly. Perfectly. I obviously didn't do a top five because there were some wires crossed. So I'll do some honorable mentions here. Three honorable mentions. The Deer Hunter. Michael Cimino.
Yeah.
Jaws. Steven Spielberg. And
I don't
Seven.
Think Jaws counted. I did think about that, but I don't think it counts.
Why does Jaws not count? Why does that not count?
Because he made a movie I saw on the Horror Channel years and years ago. So let's have a look. Because one, Duel, that was 1971, and then The Sugar Land Express was 1974, so
Already.
And also he had Something Evil. He did that one. I know they're TV movies, but I still think they count.
Okay, we'll dismiss Jaws. Seven, the final one, David Fincher. Brilliant, brilliant movie as well. So that was his second. Obviously, he did Alien 3 as well.
Yeah, which
no one knows why.
He wants to take his name off. He absolutely hates that movie.
It's so random on his like list of movies that he's done that he did that, especially for it to be his first.
Well, it was a music video, wasn't it? He was like a TV advert music video, so like you could see why Alien 3 would be a good movie for him.
Yeah, still random though. But yeah, it created his career, and then he created obviously some great movies after. But yeah, Seven is a brilliant movie. It's a brilliant movie. So yeah, there you go. There are my mentions, and we will move on to next week's episode. What we'll be doing. It's a big one, this one. And one we've been planning for a few weeks.
Yes.
We are going to be ranking every Jim Carrey movie from worst to best.
And not only
That's
movies.
Right.
We're ranking his filmography.
Yeah, we're ranking his filmography. So there's a lot. There's a lot to get through. I wanted to just do movies.
I like what we did with the Adam Sandler thing. The Adam Sandler thing I really like. And I think...
We've set a precedent.
I think that there's a lot to talk about. And I've been watching a lot of Carrie stuff. I'm Carrie heavy at the moment.
Yeah, carried out at the moment. Carry me home, please.
Well, carry home.
Carry home. Whew, thank God he stopped making movies recently. God damn it. Yeah, he has a lot. His credits are interesting, and I think this is going to be a very interesting list, actually. And we have a lot to talk about with some of the stuff we saw. So join us next week, and let's hope that it's on par with the Adam Sandler ranking list.
Mm-hmm.
We set a standard there.
Let's hope that you actually make your list this time instead of like pretending that the top five sophomore movies is not a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's different. Miscommunication. Jim Carrey's been in the works for some time now.
Didn't hear me or didn't want to hear me.
It was in person, all right, and I had a beer probably. So, yeah, anyway. I blame our Norwegian friend who distracted me at the time. He is to blame.
Yeah. Blame a person that can't defend himself right now. That seems like the best option you have.
And that's what I'll do. Right, so join us next week. It's probably going to be a long episode, so this one is a little bit shorter because that one's, it's getting... There are no bounds to how long that episode could be, so it's until we fucking figure it out, all right? So, yeah, the full thing will be next week, and we'll catch you then.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.